28. Wax stilled. Wayne let the hand fall limp. He wanted to just sit here, stare at nothing like those fellows in rows nearby, the ones that weren't crushed. Sit and become nothing. All his life, only one man had believed in him. Only one man had forgiven him, had encouraged him. The rest of this damned race could burn away and become ash for all Wayne cared. He hated them all. But what would Wax say?
"He left me, the bastard," Wayne thought, wiping his eyes.
In that moment, he hated Wax too. But then Wayne loved him more than the hatred. He growled and stumbled to his feet. He had no weapons. He dropped his dueling canes above. He stared at Wax's body, then knelt and felt along the man's leg. He got a hold of something and yanked it free. The shotgun. Wayne's hands immediately started shaking. "You stop that," he hissed at them. "We're done with that." He cocked the shotgun, then went looking for a way out of this tomb.
"The whole temple is a decoy," Marcy thought, trembling in the cold. "So where are the actual bands?"
The place was built for the Lord Ruler, who would supposedly return to claim his weapon. Where would you put that weapon?
He'd know what it looked like, Marcy thought. He built it. We think it was in the shape of bracers, but it didn't have to be. Could be anything.
That would be smart if you were making a weapon. These metal mines, you had to know what they did before they worked. You could protect yourself so only someone who knew what to look for could use your weapon. And in that case, the people who built the temple could have left the weapon where the returning Lord Ruler would see it, but everyone else would pass right by, digging farther into the temple to encounter traps, pits, and decoys, all designed to either kill them or convince them that they'd successfully robbed the place.
Where did you put the weapon?
On the doorstep, under the sign of the Sovereign himself, in his very own hand. Marcy turned, frantic, searching out the oversized spearhead. It lay right beside her, where the guard had dropped it. Waxillium had called it aluminum because he couldn't sense it, but he hadn't looked closely enough. If he had, he'd have seen it was made of different interwoven metals, wavy, like the folds forged into the blade of a sword. He couldn't push on it, not because it was aluminum, but because it was a metal mind stored with more power than any they'd ever seen. Around Wax, everything became misty and indistinct. The cavern, the rocks, the ground itself, all just mist. He could stand on it somehow. Harmony stepped up beside Wax in the misty darkness. They fell in beside one another, walking as was natural for men to do. God looked much as Wax had always imagined him. Tall, peaceful, hands laced before himself. Face like a long oval, serene and human, though he towed behind him a cloak of timelessness. Wax could see it, trailing after. Storms and winds, clouds and rain, deserts and forests, all reflected somehow in this creature's wake. His robe was the Terrace V pattern, where each V was not a color, but an age, a strata of time, like those of a deep rock uncovered.
"They say," Wax said softly, "that you come to all people when they die.
It is a duty I consider to be among my most sacred," Harmony said. "Even with other pressing matters, I find time to take this walk."
He had a quiet voice, familiar to Wax, like that of a forgotten friend.
"I'm dead, then."
"Yes," Harmony said. "Your body, mind, and soul have separated. Soon one will return to the earth, another to the Cosmere, and the third, even I do not know."
Wax continued walking. The shadowy cavern vanished, and Wax had a feeling of blurring. Mists became darkness, and all he could see was a distant light, like the sun below the horizon.
"If you can take time to walk with us," Wax said, bitter, "why not come a little earlier? Why not stop the walk before it must begin?"
"Should I prevent all hardship, Waxillium?"
"I know where this is going," Wax said. "I know what you're going to say. You value choice. Everyone theorizes about it. But you can help. You've done it before in placing me where I needed to go. You intervene. So why not intervene more? Prevent children from being killed. Make certain that constables arrive in time to stop deaths. You don't have to take away choice, but you could do more. I know you could."
He left the last part unsaid. "You could have saved her, or at least told me what I was doing." Harmony nodded. It felt bizarre to be demanding things, but Rusts, if this was the end, Wax wanted a few answers.
"What is it to be God, Waxillium?" Harmony asked.
"I don't think that's a question I can answer."
"It is not one I ever thought I'd have to answer either," Harmony said. "But obviously it has been forced upon me. You would have me intervene and stop the murders of innocents. I could do this. I have considered it. If I were to stop everyone, what then? Do I stop maimings as well?"
"Of course," Wax said.
"And where do I hold back, Waxillium? Do I prevent all wounds? Or do I prevent only those caused by evil people? Do I stop a man from falling asleep so that he will not tip a candle and burn down his house? Do I stop all harm that could ever befall a person?"
"Maybe."
"And once nobody is ever hurt," Harmony said, "will people be satisfied? Will they not pray to me and ask for more? Will some people still curse and spit at the sound of my name because they are poor, while another is rich? Should I mitigate this? Make everyone the same, Waxillium?"
"I won't be caught in this trap," Wax said. "You're the god, not me. You could find a line where you prevent the worst. You can find a line where you're stopping the worst that is reasonable, while still letting us live our lives."
The light ahead suddenly rolled outward, and Wax found that they'd been rounding a planet. They stood high above it and had stepped from darkness into sunlight, which let Wax see the world below, bathed in a calm, cool light. Beyond that hung a haze of red. All around, pressing in upon the world, he could feel it choking him, a miasma of dread and destruction.
"Perhaps," Harmony said softly, "I have already done just as you suggest. You do not see it, because the worst never reaches you."
"What is it?" Wax asked, trying to take in that vast redness. It beat inward, but he could see something, a thin strip of light, like a bubble around the world, stopping it.
"A representation," Harmony said. "A crude one, perhaps."
He looked to Wax and smiled, like a father at a wide-eyed child.
"We're not done with our conversation," Wax said. "You let her die. You let me kill her."
"And how long," Harmony asked softly, "must you hate yourself for that?"
Wax clenched his jaw, but couldn't force down the trembling that took him. He lived it again, holding her as she died, knowing he'd killed her. That hatred seethed inside of him. Hatred for Harmony, hatred for the world. And yes, hatred for himself.
"Why?" Wax asked.
"Because you demanded it of me."
"No, I didn't."
"Yes, a part of you did. An eventuality I can see. One of many possible Waxilliums, all you, yet not set. Know yourself, Waxillium. Would you have had another kill her? Someone she didn't know.
No, he whispered.
Would you have had her live on, a slave in her mind, corrupted by that cursed spike that would forever leave her scarred, even if replaced?
No,
he was crying. And if you had known, Harmony said, holding his eyes, that you'd never have been able to pull that trigger unless your eyes were veiled. If you'd realized what knowledge of the truth would do to you, stilling your hand and trapping her in an endless prison of madness, what would you have asked of me?
Don't tell me, Wax whispered, squeezing his eyes shut.
The silence seemed to stretch until eternity. I am sorry, Harmony said with a gentle voice, for your pain. I am sorry for what you did, what we had to do. But I am not sorry for making you do what had to be done. Wax opened his eyes. And when I hold back, staying my hand from protecting those below, Harmony said, I must do it out of trust in what people can do on their own. He glanced toward the red haze. And because I have other problems to occupy me.
You didn't tell me what it was, Wax said.
That is because I do not know.
That frightens me.
Harmony looked to him.
It should.
Down below, a tiny spark flickered on one of the land masses. Wax blinked. He'd seen it, despite the incredible distance. What was that? He asked. Harmony smiled. Trust. Marisie clutched the spearhead in two hands and tapped everything. Power flooded into her, lighting her up like an inferno. Snow hung motionless in the air. She stood up and reached to the belt of one of her captors, removing one of his vials of metal. She took them all, several from each guard, and drank them. She was tapping a metal mind, letting her move at a speed so fast that when she lifted her hand, she could briefly see the pocket of vacuum left behind. She smiled. Then she burned her metals. All of them. In that one transcendent moment, she felt herself change, expand. She felt the Lord Ruler's own power, stored in the bands of mourning, the spearhead clutched in her fingers, surge through her, and she felt she would burst. It was as if an ocean of light had suddenly been pumped into her arteries and veins. Blue lines exploded from her, first pointing at metals, then multiplying, changing, transforming. She saw through it all, everything in blue. There were no people or objects, just energy coalesced. The metals shone brilliantly as if they were holes in some place different, concentrated essence, providing a pathway to power. She was using the reserves with startling quickness. She slowed her speed, and for some reason the people beside her jumped, holding their ears. She cocked her head, then pushed. The push flung the guards a good 50 feet. That left her facing Suit and Telson, who regarded her with horrified expressions. They were glowing energy to her, but she recognized them. They had spikes inside of them. Convenient. Those spikes resisted pushes, but not enough to bother Marisie now. She lifted a hand and flung both of them away by the very metals they'd used to pierce themselves. All around, guards grabbed guns and turned on her. She swept them backward, then lifted herself off the ground, pushing on the trace minerals in the stone beneath her. She hung there and was surprised to see something spinning around her. Mist? Where was it coming from?
Me,
she realized. She hovered in the sky, flush with power. In that moment, she was the Ascendant Warrior. She held the fullness of what Waxillium had barely tasted his whole life. She could be him, eclipse him. She could bring justice to entire peoples. Holding it all within her, having it and measuring it,
she finally admitted the truth to herself.
This isn't what I want.
She would not let her childhood dreams hold sway over her any longer. She smiled, then threw herself through the air in a push toward the temple. Steris watched her sister fly away.
Unexpected, she said.
And here she assumed she'd been prepared for anything. Marisy starting to glow, throwing people around with allomancy as if they were dolls, then streaking away and leaving a trail of mist? Well, that hadn't been on the list. It hadn't even made the appendix. She looked down at poor Alec, so cold he'd stopped shivering.
I shall have to enlarge my projections of what is plausible during activities such as this, don't you think?
He mumbled something in his language.
For Elit men,
he waved his hand in a gesture.
For Salvin.
Telling me to flee without you,
Steris said, walking over and retrieving her notebook.
Yes, running while they are all confused would be wise, but I don't plan to leave yet.
She opened the notebook, which she'd hollowed out with Wax's knife in the rear of the skimmer while Marisy was talking with Alec up front and the others slept.
Did you know that when I evaluated everyone's usefulness on this expedition, I gave myself a 7 out of 100? Not very high, yes, but I couldn't reasonably give myself the lowest mark possible. I do have my uses.
She turned the large notebook, showing an extra medallion from the skimmer's emergency store, settled protectively into the gouged-out section she'd made. She smiled at Alec, pulled it free, and pressed it into his hand. He let out a long, relieved sigh, and the blown snow that had stuck to his face melted away. Nearby, soldiers were regaining their feet and shouting to one another.
And now, Steris said, I think your earlier suggestion has merit.
Now what? Wax asked Harmony. I fade off into nothing?
I don't believe it's nothing, God said. There is something beyond, though perhaps my belief is merely my own desire wishing it to be so.
You are not encouraging me. Aren't you omnipotent?
Hardly, Harmony said, smiling. But I believe that parts of me could be.
That doesn't make any sense.
It won't until I make it do so,
Harmony said, extending his hands to either side.
In answer to your question, however, you don't fade just yet, though soon. Right now, you make a choice.
Wax looked from one of the deity's hands to the other.
Does everyone get this choice?
Their choices are different.
He proffered his hands to Wax, as if offering them for him to take.
I don't see the choice.
My right hand, Harmony said, is freedom. You can feel it, I think.
And he could. Soaring, released from all bonds, riding upon lines of blue light. Adventure into the unknown, seeking only the fulfillment of his own curiosity. It was glorious. It was what he'd always wanted, and its lure thrummed through him.
Freedom. Wax gasped. What is the other one?
Harmony held up his left hand, and Wax heard something. A voice?
Wax,
it said. Yes, a frantic one. Feminine.
Wax! You have to know what it does. It will heal you, Wax. Waxillium! Please!
That hand, Wax said, looking at it. That hand is duty, isn't it?
No, Waxillium, Harmony said gently. Although that is how you've seen it. Duty or freedom, burden or adventure. You were always the one who made the right choice when others played, and so you resent it.
No, I don't, Wax said.
Harmony smiled. The understanding in his face was infuriating.
This hand, Harmony said, is not duty. It is but a different adventure.
Wax,
the voice said from below, choked with emotion. It belonged to Marisy.
You have to tap the metal mind.
Wax reached toward the left hand, and Harmony, shockingly, pulled it away.
Are you certain?
I have to.
Do you?
I have to. It's who I am.
Then perhaps, Harmony said, you should stop hating that, my son.
He extended the hand. Wax hesitated. Tell me one thing first.
If it is within my means.
Did she come here when she passed?
Harmony smiled.
She asked me to look after you.
Wax seized the left hand with his own. He was immediately pulled toward something, like air being sucked through a hole. Warmth bathed him. Then it became a fire. Pulling breath into his lungs, he screamed, heaving, throwing the boulder off. It clattered to the side, and he found himself in the low-roofed chamber beneath the temple. Such strength! He hadn't thrown that rock with muscles, but with steel. His body re-knit even as he launched himself to his feet by pushing on tiny traces of metal in the ground beneath him. He landed and looked down at his left hand, the one that had been dangling, broken, before his face as he died. Clutched in it was an oversized spearhead crafted from 16 different metals melded together. He looked up from it and toward Marisi, who regarded him with tear-stained eyes but a broad smile.
You found it, Wax said.
She nodded eagerly.
Just took a little old-fashioned detective work.
You saved me, Wax said. Rust and ruin. Such power.
He felt as if he could level cities or build them up anew.
Suit and your sister are outside, Marisi said. I left the others there. Well, I wasn't thinking straight. Or maybe I was thinking too much. Here.
She handed him a vial of metals. Wax took it, then held up the bands.
You could have done this yourself.
No,
Marisi said.
I couldn't have.
But
I couldn't have,
Marisi said.
It just isn't me.
She shrugged.
Does that make sense?
Surprisingly, yes.
He flexed his hand around the bands.
Go, Marisi said. Do what you do best, Waxillium Ladrian.
Which is what? Break things?
Break things, Marisi said. With style.
He grinned, then downed the vial of metals. 29.
Waxillium's followers have the bands, Suit whispered to himself as he crossed the dark stony field. Snow had begun falling, a bitter, icy snow, nothing like the soft flakes he'd occasionally seen in the eastern basin.
It is a crisis. They will be coming for us. We must move up our timetables.
He chewed on the words, mulling them over as he pulled his coat tight. Warming device notwithstanding, that wind was annoying.
Would they buy his argument? No, not dire enough. Waxillium and his people have the bands, he whispered to himself. This will undoubtedly let the Chondra devise the means of creating metal mines anyone can use. We must move up our timetables and seize Elendil now, or we will find ourselves technologically outmatched.
Yes, that was the idea. Even the most careful of the series would be distressed by the prospect of being technologically outmaneuvered. This would convince them to give him the leeway he desired. Anything could be an advantage. He wanted the bands for himself, but in lieu of that, he'd find something else. Suit always found the advantage. He passed soldiers scurrying about and unloading weapons on the frozen plain of rock. They'd planned for a potential fight here, as he'd worried he might encounter more of the masked savages.
Sir!
One of the men called.
Orders!
He gestured toward the sky.
If anyone other than the sequence drops from the air or approaches your position, shoot them! Then keep shooting, even after they are down.
Yes, sir!
The soldier said, waving to a group of his men. He turned toward an empty rack, then paused.
My rifle! Who took my rifle?
Suit continued on past, tossing the fake bands of mourning into the snow and leaving the troops to hopefully slow down Waxillium's minions. He eagerly marched aboard the new airship. Now this device, this was an advantage. The bands could serve one man, make a deity out of him. A fleet of ships like this could deify an entire army. The wooden hallway inside had gaslights set into lamps with austere metal housings. It was all distinctly plainer than the ship that had crashed in Dulsing. The wood here was unornamented, unpolished. The other ship had felt decorated like a den. This one, a warehouse.
Probably cheaper to build this way, he thought, nodding his head in approval.
Footsteps clattered above as men charged through one of the corridors on another deck, and Suit brushed the snow from his arms as a technician ran up to him, bearing the red uniform of the set's hidden guard.
My lord, the man said, proffering one of the medallions. You'll need this.
Suit took it and rolled up his sleeve to strap it to his upper arm.
Is the ship operational?
The man's eyes lit up.
Yes, sir. The machinery is operational, sheltered as it was from the weather. Sir, it's amazing. You can feel the energy pulsing off that metal. We did have to send men out to unclog the fans. A few of the coin shots helped, and we have them moving now. Fed is down below, priming the weight-changing machinery with her ferrochemy to lighten the ship. That should be the last step.
Then lift us off, Suit said, walking toward where he assumed the bridge would be found.
My Lord Suit, the man called after him. Aren't we waiting for the sequence?
He hesitated only briefly. Where had she gotten to?
Another advantage, he thought.
He could stand being sequence.
She will join us aloft if she can, he said. Our priority is to get this ship and its secrets to a secure location.
As the technician saluted and ran to obey, Suit filled his medallion, becoming lighter. So much easier than getting his spikes had been. It was hard not to feel that their experiments in hemallergy had been a waste, a dead end. The ship quivered, and the fans started up with a much louder sound than he had expected. Before he reached the bridge, the thing rocked, and he heard ice cracking above the sound of the fans. He leaned over to a porthole, looking out as the ground retreated. It worked. Immediately, implications flooded his mind. Travel, shipping, warfare. New regions could be settled, new types of buildings and docks would be needed. It would all flow through him. He suppressed a smile, best to celebrate after he was safely away, but he could not stop the heady sensation. The set had been planning for events a century or more away, putting careful plots into motion at his suggestion. He was proud of those, but truth be told, he'd rather they rule in his lifetime. And with this, he could do so.
Jordis huddled in the tent, watching her crew die. It had been long coming, this death, the last ember of the fire refusing to give up its spark. During the terrible march through the dead rain, her people had been given tiny sips of warmth from a metal mind, enough to barely keep them alive, like plants locked in a dark shed for most of the day. But now, in this place, the cold was too pervasive, and the hardships of the march too devastating. She crawled among her crew and whispered encouragement, though she could no longer feel her fingers or toes. Most of the men and women of the ship couldn't even nod. A few had started removing their clothing, complaining of heat. Chill fever had struck them. Not long now. The maskless devils seemed to know this. They'd posted a single guard at the tent. Her people could have snuck away out the back, perhaps. But what would they sneak toward? Death outside in the winds, rather than death inside here?
How do the maskless survive it? She wondered. They must be devils indeed, born of the frost itself to be so capable of withstanding the cold. Jordis knelt beside Petrine, the engine master and eldest of her crew. How had the woman survived so long? She was by no means feeble, but she was past her sixth decade. Petrine lifted her hand and gripped Jordis's arm. Though her wrinkled eyes were shadowed by the mask, Jordis needed no gesture or expression to know Petrine's emotions.
Do we attack? Petrine asked. For what purpose?
We could die by their weapons instead of the cold.
Wise, those words. Perhaps they could... A loud thump came from outside the tent. Jordis found her feet, surprisingly, though most of the others remained huddling where they lay. The front of the tent burst open, and a man with a familiar but broken mask appeared there. Impossible. Was the chill fever striking her, too? The man raised his mask and displayed a bearded, youthful face.
I am sorry to have come in unannounced, Alex said, but I bear gifts, as is traditional for visiting someone's house unannounced, yes?
He held up a gloved fist, which clutched a bundle of medallions by their cords. Jordis looked from the medallions to young Alec, then back. For once, she didn't even care about how free he was with raising his mask. She stumbled to him, seizing one of them, unable to believe. The wonderful warmth ran through her like a sunrise within. She sighed in relief, her mind clearing. It was him.
How?
She whispered.
I, Alec proclaimed, have made friends with some of the devils.
He gestured to the side, and a female maskless one almost toppled in, wearing one of the long dresses that were popular here, carrying an armful of rifles. She said something in her language, dropping the guns to the floor of the tent and dusting off her hands.
I think she wants us to start shooting the other ones, Alec said, as Jordis quickly grabbed the other medallions and began distributing them to the most severely afflicted of her people. I, for one, am more than happy to oblige.
Petrine continued the distribution as Jordis armed herself with one of the guns. Though the warmth was wonderful, she still felt weak, and she didn't want to look in her boots to see if her toes had frostbite.
I don't know that we will put up much of a fight.
Better than no fight at all, yes, Captain? Alec asked.
This is true, Jordis admitted,
and made a sign of respect, touching her right shoulder with her left hand, then lowering her hand to touch her wrist.
You did well. Almost I forgive you for your terrible dancing.
She turned to Petrine.
Arm the men and women with these weapons. Let's kill as many of the devils as we can.
Wax ripped from the temple in a burst of might and alomancy. He spun above the building, rocks flung by his explosive exit tumbling in the air around him, trailing mist. Below, a storm of gunfire broke out on the previously quiet mountainside, though they weren't firing at him. Above it, an airship lumbered through the sky, fans whirring powerfully on its two pontoons. It was awesome to behold, but the ship was obviously not spry. It moved with the ponderous motions of something very large and very heavy, even with the weight reduction granted by the medallions. Wax was tempted to crush the ship, push the nails from their mountings, rip the thing apart in a storm of destruction, dumping Suit and his traitorous sister to the frozen ground below. He almost did it. But, Rusts, he wasn't an executioner. He was a lawman. He'd rather die than betray that. Well, die again. He dropped, then used the trace metals and the stonework of the temple as an anchor to send himself soaring across the ground in a swoop. A few of the soldiers below took half-hearted shots at him, but most seemed engrossed in a gunfight with a group of people in masks who had taken up a position behind a rocky shelf. Styrus, Alec, Wax thought, identifying them. Good. He landed among the soldiers and flung them aside. He grabbed an aluminum pistol from one of their racks, loaded it, then waved to the masked people before hurling himself into the sky after the airship. He was strong, incredibly strong. The bands, still clutched in his left hand, somehow gave him not just allomancy, but ancient allomancy. The potency of those who lived long ago, during the time of the Lord Ruler, perhaps even more. Was that possible?
What did you create, he wondered, and how long will it last?
His resources were diminishing, not merely the metals inside of him, but the reserves stored inside the bands, stores that changed his level of investiture. He should have held back, he knew, reserved it for study or for use in a future emergency. But Rusts, it was intoxicating. He reached the airship easily, despite only having a few shell casings to push upon below. He soared up and landed on the ship's nose, then smashed his hand through one of the windows to the bridge, any cuts healing immediately. Inside, Suit sat alone. There was no sign of pilots, technicians, or servants. Just a wide, half-oval deck, not even carpeted, and Suit in a chair. Wax climbed in and raised the aluminum pistol. His boots thumped on the wood. He did a quick scan. People in the hallway outside, he thought, and a bit of metal in Suit's mouth. The old coin-in-the-mouth trick, a way to hide metal from an allomancer. Anything inside the body was very hard to sense. Unless you were bearing the very powers of creation, that is.
And so, Suit said, lighting his pipe, our confrontation comes at long last.
Not much of a confrontation, Wax said, still alight with power. I could destroy you 100 different ways right now, Uncle.
I don't doubt that you could,
Suit said, shaking out his match, then puffing on the pipe, trying to hide the coin. Talking around a pipe let him have a reason to sound odd.
And here I can only destroy you one way.
Wax leveled his pistol. Suit looked right at it and smiled.
Do you know why I've always beaten you, nephew?
You haven't beaten me, Wax said. You've refused to fight. That is an entirely different thing.
But sometimes the only way to win is to refuse to fight.
Wax strode forward, wary of traps. He thought faster, moved faster than normal. The blue lines spread from him as a brilliant web seeking sources of metal smaller and farther away than he could normally sense. At times this seemed to flicker, and for a moment he saw the radiance inside of each person and thing. It felt as if he might be able to move those too. An awed voice in the back of his mind whispered, "They're all the same. Metal, minds, men, all the same substance." "What have you done, Uncle?" Wax asked softly.
"And here I must answer my own question," Edworn said, shaking his head and standing. "I beat you, Waxillium, not because of preparation, though it is extensive. I beat you not because of wit or strength of arm, but because of a unique ability of mine. Creativity."
"You're going to bludgeon me with paintings?"
"Always quick with a wry comment," Suit said. "Bravo."
"What have you done?"
"I armed the bomb," Suit said. "It is set to explode in mere moments, unless I stop it."
"Let it explode," Wax said, holding up the bands, metallic strata weaving across the triangular chunk of metal. "I'm pretty sure I'll survive it."
"And those below?" Suit asked. "Your friends? My captives? From the sounds of it, they are fighting quite vigorously for their freedom. How sad it will be to see them vaporized by an explosion I've been told should be enough to destroy a large city all on its—"
Wax increased the speed of his thoughts, tapping zinc. He sorted through a dozen scenarios. Find the explosives and push them away? How far could he get them? Would Suit detonate the bomb before he could arrive? His speed of body was nearly tapped out. Marcy must have used that in getting to him. So yes, Suit would have time, though would he actually do it? Would he blow himself up along with this ship to defeat Wax? If this were an ordinary criminal, Wax would have bet strongly against it. Unfortunately, Suit and the set in general had demonstrated a level of fanaticism he had not expected. Like the way Miles had acted as he was executed. These people were not just thugs and thieves. They were political reformers, slaves to an ideal. What else? What else could Wax do? He discarded scenario after scenario. Get Marcy and the others to safety? Too slow. Shoot Suit now. The man could heal himself, and Wax might not have time to get the bomb and remove it before the blast happened anyway. Push the ship upward. He wouldn't be able to do that fast enough. Unless he pushed slowly, he'd rip the vessel apart.
"Own," Suit said.
"What do you want?" Wax demanded. "I'm not going to let you go."
"You don't need to," Suit said. "I have little doubt that you'd chase me across the world, Waxillium. I might be creative, but you are tenacious."
"What then?"
"You drop the bands out the window," Suit said. "I order the bomb disarmed.
then we face one another as men without unnatural advantages.
You think I'd trust you?
You don't need to, Suit said. Just give me your word you'll do it.
Done, Wax said.
Disarm the device,
Suit shouted toward the door. He strolled to the front of the ship and spoke into a tube there.
Disarm it and stand down.
Feet thumped away from the door. Wax could actually watch them go, not by their metals, but by the signature their souls made. In moments he could see nobody there, or hiding anywhere around the bridge. A voice soon echoed up through the tube. The tin Wax burned let him hear.
Done, my lord.
A pause.
Thank Trell for that.
The voice sounded relieved. Suit turned to Wax.
There is a tradition in the Roughs, is there not? Two men, a dusty road, guns on their hips. Man against man. One lives, the other dies. A dispute settled.
He patted the sidearm at his hip.
I can't give you a dusty road, but perhaps we can squint and pretend that the frost is playing that role?
Wax drew his lips to a line. Edworn looked entirely serene.
Don't make me do this, Uncle.
Why?
Suit said.
I know you've been itching for this exact opportunity. You have an aluminum gun, I see, the same as mine. No steel pushing to interfere. Just two men and their sidearms.
Uncle,
you've dreamed of it, son. The chance to shoot me, no questions asked, and not be running afoul of the law. Besides, to the law, I'm already dead. Your conscience can rest. I won't give in, and I'm armed. The only way to stop me is to shoot me. Let's do it.
Wax fingered the bands of mourning and felt himself smiling.
You don't understand at all, do you?
Oh, I do. I've seen it in you. The hidden hunger of the lawman, wishing to be cut free so he can kill. It's what defines you and your type.
No,
Wax said. He unhooked the holster from his leg, the one that had held his shotgun, and slipped the bands into its leather pouch. His remaining bullets and metal vials followed, leaving him with no medals save the aluminum gun.
Perhaps I have felt hidden hunger, Wax said, but it isn't what defines me.
Oh, and what does?
Wax tossed the leather holding the bands out the broken window, then slipped his gun into his side holster.
I'll show you.
Telson scrambled in the snow, climbing through it frantic. Suit was an idiot. She'd always known this, but today made it manifest. Flying away in the ship? That was the first place they'd go to chase him. He was as good as dead. Today was a disaster. An unparalleled disaster. Waxillium knew of her subterfuge. The set was exposed. Their plans were crumbling. Something had to be salvageable. She stumbled to a small clearing in the snow near the temple entrance where her people had deposited the skimmer that she and Waxillium had ridden in on. Still functional, hopefully. She knew how it worked. She'd watched carefully during their trip. All she needed to do was... Something banged behind her. She blinked at the sudden spray of redness on the snow all around her. Flakes of it. Her blood.
You killed one of my friends today, a ragged voice said from behind. I'm not going to let you take a second.
She fell to her knees before the craft, then turned her head. Wayne stood behind her in the snow, his face haggard, holding a shotgun.
You, Telson whispered. You can't. Guns?
Yeah, Wayne said, cocking the shotgun. About that.
He lowered the barrel to her face and fired. Maris climbed the previously hidden steps back into the room with the broken glass and the ornate pedestal. She didn't know what had opened this hidden path, but she was glad for it. Ever blunt, Waxillium had simply ripped himself a hole out of the catacombs, going straight up through the stone. Half this chamber had collapsed as a result, but following his route would have been an arduous climb. The power was gone. She'd handed it over to Waxillium, but instead of feeling deflated, she felt peaceful. Hers was the serenity of a woman who'd lain stretched out on a perfect summer day, feeling the sun as it slowly sank. Yes, the light was gone now, but oh, what a joy it had been. Poor Milan was still here, and her form had started to incorporate the bones, slowly assembling them in a strange configuration. With no spikes, she'd become a mist wraith. Marisi knelt beside her, but wasn't certain what comfort she could offer. At the very least, Milan seemed to still be alive. Marisi rose, then hurried down the hallway with the traps, reaching the entryway with the murals. Outside, a war was going on, hundreds of gunshots echoing in the cold, snow-filled night. She was surprised to see that the people in masks seemed to be winning. The soldiers had been pushed back to the edge of the stone field, their backs to a series of gulfs and cliffs. They had nowhere to retreat, and many of their number lay dead or wounded. She thought she saw Waxillium's influence in the way some of those bodies lay, as if tossed through the air to land crumpled. Marisi nodded in satisfaction. Let him do the job he came to do. She still had one of her own to finish. She strode out of the temple, down the steps past the statue of the Lord Ruler, holding what now, with the spearhead removed, appeared to be only a staff. Now where would she find a loud gunshot from quite nearby? She swiveled her head, searching for the source. A second one sounded. A moment later, Wayne emerged through the snowstorm, head down, expression shadowed. He carried a shotgun on his shoulder and clutched not one, but three small metal spikes in his other hand. Wax stood quietly on the bridge of the ship, waiting for his uncle to move. This didn't work the way it did in the stories. You didn't outdraw a man. Couldn't happen. Not with ferrochemical speed. If you waited for him to start moving, you would be too slow. He'd tried it with blanks on the fastest men he knew. The man who drew first got the first shot. That was that. Suit drew. Wax pushed on the metal window frame behind him. He crossed the distance between them in a blur, even as Suit fired. The bullet hit Wax in the shoulder, but Wax collided with the surprised Suit, knocking them both to the floor of the bridge. Suit grabbed his arm. Wax's metal reserves vanished.
Aha! Suit said. I made myself a leecher. I can drain the metals from anyone who touches me, Waxillium. You're dead. No bands. No allomancy. I win.
Wax grunted, clinging tight to Suit as they rolled.
You forget, he said. I'm not surprised. You've always hated it. I'm a terraceman, uncle.
He increased his weight many-fold. He tapped everything he had in his arm bracer, hundreds of hours spent being lighter than he should have been. He brought it all out in one moment of desperation. The airship lurched, and then the floor shattered. Wax clung to Suit as they fell, holding him tight, though one hand was weakening from the gunshot. They crashed through two levels of the ship, Suit's body, which tapped healing, bearing the brunt of the damage, before smashing out the bottom, battered, bleeding, and thrashed by splintered wood. Suit looked horrified.
You fool, you—
Wax spun him in the air, pointing Suit downward as they plummeted. Snow-filled air was a roaring wind around them, flakes streaking past. Suit screamed. And then he pushed. Suit dropped the coin from his mouth and used his allomancy to push it downward in a straight shot. It hit the approaching ground and slowed the two of them with a lurch. Wax decreased his weight just enough that Suit's push was sufficient to keep them alive. They crashed into the snow, some distance from the plateau with the temple. Wax recovered first. He lurched to his feet and pulled Suit up by one hand, the two of them standing alone in a field of white. Suit looked up at him, dazed by the fall and the impact.
The definition of a lawman, uncle, is easy, Wax said, feeling blood from a dozen cuts trickle down his face.
He lifted Suit by the front of his clothing, bringing him close.
He's the man who takes the bullet, so nobody else has to.
With that, Wax decked him across the face and dropped him to the snow, unconscious. Milan swam in a sea of terror. terror within her own mind, a piece of her knowing this was not right, this being ruled by instinct, this craven set of impulses. But this is what she did. Food. She needed food. No. First a place to hide, from the trembling sounds. Hide away, find a crack. She continued building a body that would let her walk, flee. So cold. She didn't understand coldness. It wasn't a thing that should be. And she couldn't taste dirt, just stone. Stone everywhere. Frozen stone. She felt like screaming. Something was missing. Not food, not a place to hide, but something. Something was horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. An object dropped on her. It was cold, but not stone. This wasn't food. She unfolded it and intended to spit it away. But then something happened. Something wonderful. She gobbled up the second one as it was dropped and began to undulate, frantic. It came back. Memory. Knowledge. Rationality. Self. She exulted in it, ignoring the little holes that were now poked in her memory. She remembered most of the trip here, but something had happened in the room with the bands. No, the bands hadn't been there, and she formed eyes first, and she knew what she would see when she opened them. She'd already tasted him on the air and knew his flavor.
"Welcome back," Wayne said, grinning. "I think we won."